Alleluia.
The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. An argument arose among the disciples about which of them was the greatest. Jesus realized the intention of their hearts and took a child, placed the child by his side, and said to them, "Whoever receives this child in my name receives me. Whoever receives me receives the one who sent me. For the one who is least among all of you is the one who is the greatest." Then John said in reply, "Master, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to prevent him, because he does not follow in our company." Jesus said, "Do not prevent him, for whoever is not against you is for you." The Gospel of the Lord. The disciples, the apostles, were always arguing about who was the greatest because they all had ambition. That ambition was stoked when Jesus, the one to whom they looked as the Messiah, the great miracle worker, called them to be as among his associates. But they didn't realize the path to greatness, and as we've talked about many times, Jesus constantly wants to convert our ambitions into holy ones. The ultimate ambition we should have is to be like him, to imitate him to the extent that it is possible as a human person to do so. One of the ways that he summons us to imitate him is through imitating his imitation of the Father, through Jesus' own participation in the Father's paternity and his becoming the principal icon of it. We often, when we look at Jesus, look at him from the perspective of Son of God, and that's obviously principal in the relations of the Trinity. Many of the early saints, most especially St. Miletus of Sardo, always looked at Jesus' fatherhood as the icon of the Father's fatherhood. Jesus, who through all that he did in his passion, death, and resurrection, and particularly through the sacraments he has left us, is the one who imparts to us the Zoe, that supernatural life, as a father always does. In today's Gospel, Jesus explicitly calls us to imitate that type of spiritual paternity. The whole church is supposed to live this as the bride in communion with Jesus, the bridegroom, for all children entrusted to the church's care. And each of us, as spiritual dads and spiritual moms, are supposed to attempt to become great in imitating Jesus' fatherly love. And so, when they were arguing about who was the greatest, Jesus, seeing their hearts, took a little child and placed the child by his side and said, "Whoever receives this child in my name receives me." Jesus was receiving that child with incredible love, and he wants us to be able to do the same in his name, saying that whenever we exercise that type of spiritual parenthood in communion with him, we're not just receiving children or even seniors. We're receiving him and the Father. Therefore, to become great first, we must exercise our divine filiation and recognize that we are children welcomed with love by the Father. But then to recognize that welcoming is meant to be transformative and to help us, having been received, to receive others as we've been received. This is one way in which we grow to love others as we have been loved by God first. Two moments first moment is about our spiritual childhood, our divine filiation, our being received with love by God. Today is a great week in the Church, which not only we will celebrate Saint Therese and all she taught us about spiritual childhood, but we'll also hear the Gospel on Friday on the Feast of the Guardian Angels about converting and becoming like little children and recognizing that everyone has guardian angels from the youngest of children praying before the throne of the Father. This way of divine filiation, as we'll have a chance to ponder on Thursday in a particular way, is a way of love and trust. It's a way that St. Therese said of conversion that leads us to recognize that those who enter God's kingdom, who convert and become like little children, are those with empty hands, those marked by spiritual poverty. Blessed are the poor in spirit, theirs is the kingdom. And therefore, to be a true child of God, we've got to trust in God's providence in everything, that we have a Father who deeply loves us. A second aspect of that is that we trust in the Father's love even when things aren't going our way. Today we begin a lengthy examination of the book of Job, which is meant to teach us the meaning of suffering, the meaning of how to remain trusting children even when, in worldly eyes, everything is going against us, recognizing that everything adverse and propitious comes from God. We see in this opening chapter the temptations to which Job was subjected after he lost basically everything except his life, his wife, and his health. He lost his family, he lost his property, he lost his animals, which would give him food. He lost pretty much it all, iteratively. If he had lost it all at the same time, it would have been easier than one after another. Could it get any worse? Yet his first reaction was the reaction of a trusting child. The Lord has given, the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He just wasn't going to be separated from God and his love. He refused. We would know that that temptation will grow greater when the false friends come, whom we'll meet over the course of this time. But he shows us how to remain always a child of God and how we should echo his words. Blessed be the name of the Lord, who gives and who takes away, and does both precisely because he loves us. When he takes away, it's meant to help us to grow in a divine filiation, not meant to punish us. It's meant to restore us even more deeply than we were before. This is an essential aspect of divine filiation. St. Therese was once asked, when she was assistant novice mistress, by a young novice, "How much do I still have to acquire in order to become holy?" And St. Therese's response was, "It's not what you have to add, it's what you have to subtract." So often in our faith, we think that spiritual growth comes through climbing a mountain. And she says that it's going into the valley of humility and allowing God to take away so many of our false crutches so that we will depend more and more on him. And this is a lesson Job not only learned, but teaches. And so sometimes we too are going to be suffering, and it might seem like it's one long litany. But in each of those, it's an invitation to us to be able to trust in God as his beloved children more. It's the first step to becoming Christ-like, which is the only form of greatness that we should be aspiring to. But that type of divine filiation, that type of having been received by the Lord with love, is meant to change us as we seek to love as we have been loved. And that means spiritual paternity, all of which begins with genuine, loving Christian receptivity, welcoming. hospitality, receiving God and receiving His gifts with incredible gratitude. Whenever He entrusts anything or anyone to us, we respond with love. We see this obviously in the Blessed Virgin Mary's receptivity, not only of God's vocation to her when she was a young girl, but also of all of us on Calvary. We see it in Saints Mary and Martha. We see it in Saint Benedict. It's meant always to characterize the Church, to be received like this. Jesus chose a little child because in the mentality of the Jews, a child couldn't pay you back. Especially a little infant wouldn't even remember all the sacrifices, all the times you would get up in the middle of the night to change diapers, all the hardships you would endure just to provide food on the table, maybe eating nothing yourself so that they wouldn't starve. A child doesn't even recognize that most of the time. And so it's the exact opposite of a quid pro quo relationship. To receive a child means to receive with love anyone to whom the Lord gives us. This is obviously essential to the culture of life. The culture of death is one of rejection and of fear. The culture of life is one of true parenthood, receiving others just as God wishes them to be received. And that's why you've got a privileged starting point to become great, because the Lord will entrust you so many spiritual daughters and sons and spiritual grandchildren. Remember that the grace has come to receive everyone as you would be receiving Christ and the Father. Today the Church celebrates the feast of San Lorenzo Ruiz and companions, and we see in him the long game of the Lord to help him become truly receptive of all that the Lord would give and take away and give precisely through taking away. He was ordinary, just like anybody else growing up in the Philippines. He was married, he had three children, he had a reputation of being an excellent calligrapher. But either he murdered someone, or minimally he was accused of murdering someone. And as a result, he tried to run away because the death penalty was associated with that crime. He found a boat leaving for Japan that had a few Dominican priests on it, a Japanese priest, and then a leper. So there weren't many jockeying for position on that boat, but desperate, it was his only chance of escape. So they went to Japan. The fugitive with the priests and the outcast. It was during the ferocious Tokugawa shogunate, and it was clear that they were all marked as Christians. When he himself was arrested and he was being verbally threatened as to what would happen to him if he didn't renounce his faith, the chroniclers tell us he asked the question, would his life really be spared if he apostatized? At least he was asking the question. He was still, in a sense, weak. But he didn't trust them, and he began to think more deeply about the whole meaning of his life up until then. Started to hear the groans of the other prisoners. He recognized what would be coming for him. He would have the back of his ear slit, and then he would be hung upside down by his heels, and he would drip to death over the course of a few days in incredible pain as all the blood was rushing to his head, and every drop that would exude from his slit ear would be with a tremendous throb. As he faced that, and as his torturers were asking for his apostasy, He said words that have become famous. I am a Christian thoroughly, and even should I have 1,000 lives, I would give every single one to the Lord. If the Lord had given him life, the Lord was going to be taking away his earthly life. But he wanted to cooperate with the Lord's will, and he wanted to give his life, not just that one time, but over and over and over and over again. He was able to do that because finally at the end of his life, whereas he didn't really trust in God when he was running away, doesn't really trust in God when he asked the question whether he would truly save his life by denying the Lord. But at the very end, like a good thief, he gave all as a spiritual child, trusting with faith that as soon as that last drop of blood had poured out from his heart, the Lord would give him the fulfillment of the promise of a new one. In the middle of life, we have 1,000 lives to give. The martyrdom of every day is meant to be a self-giving in which we come and offer as a living sacrifice our Logike Latreia in communion with what the Lord himself gives. This is what's supposed to make us truly childlike as we receive the Lord inside. Every time we go out up to the altar of the Lord, we're rejuvenated. I go up in tribut altare Dei, adem qui laetificat juventutem meam. I will go up to the altar of the Lord, to the Lord who rejuvenates me. He makes me younger. He makes me more childlike. He makes me capable of trusting in him more. That the Lord who gives us everything in his Son will provide all the means we ever need for anything. And we're trained that as we receive him with love here, under the disguise of the appearances of bread and wine, so it will become much easier to receive him in others, in a blue and white habit, in a red chasuble, or in all those others whom the Lord, out of trust for us, sends to us for a truly Christian welcome.